Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly, vigorous, relentless, and often ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the extraordinarily well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. My pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, and my name is Nick Clark, president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. 563-999-3787. We'll get you through to the Well-Armed Studio here. 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here, although I think all the Republicans the RINOs and RBNCs, Republicans but not conservatives, are safe tonight since we're doing a special broadcast with the coverage of the Kyle Rittenhouse case, which we started last week with our discussion of the pretrial motions and things leading up to the case, because here we are 1 week into testimony. I think initially the judge said that this trial was going to go expected 2 weeks. Now I think they're saying three, but so we got a great show tonight. We had a good show last week. We got a good show tonight. And I say this, and I'm being totally serious. I mean, I think if you want the best coverage, the best analysis of the Kyle Rittenhouse case, this is the place to be. You're found it here because, I mean, I've been watching the news all week. My several angles we're going to attack this from as we dissect and discuss and analyze what's been going on at the Kyle Rittenhouse case. But one of which is, I think, the comparison of what we have, when I say we, myself, Kevin Mathewson, who's going to be joining me in a second here. He's in the green room holding right now. But so we're pairing up for this. Kevin is the editor and chief investigator for the Kenosha County Eye, great news website down in Kenosha County. And Kevin's a criminal investigator in his professional endeavors, so he's good at this kind of stuff. So he's been at the courtroom at the trial every day. In fact, I think he was at most, if not all, of the hearings prior to the case as well. So we've got that perspective from him in the courtroom, who he can see the jurors reactions. I've watched I'd have to class. I mean, I've had it on every day except for Friday. Friday I was out all day at a funeral. But I think I saw a little bit of the testimony Friday afternoon when I got home. But otherwise, I've got it on during the day in between interruptions, calls, and such from running my real business. I just say maybe about 60% of the testimony I've seen and heard, but nothing on Friday. So there's that perspective. And then I like to watch the news, and I like to see the take that the news puts on this thing compared to what we're seeing in reality. Because of course, you know, the news fiction is going to present something different than what was there. Although they do have, there's a reason, just like in with polling, you know, polling for, I've always said that the thing about polling, like you got the Marquette poll here in Wisconsin that Madison Republicans worship like the Bible, which they shouldn't, because for one, that's supposedly a statewide poll, but these particular legislators, like there's a legislator in the Fox Valley who his district is the Fox Valley. He shouldn't care what people think statewide unless he's already looking like a football team looking ahead to their next game, unless he's looking for higher office already. But he should really be focused on his constituents. And I wouldn't think that the Marquette University Law School poll represents his constituents at all. But the thing about polling is that there comes a moment of truth when the election takes place. Of course, when I say moment of truth in elections, that was kind of pre-2020. And perhaps even before that, because we've known that there's been fraud for years. But when I say moment of truth, referring to an election, you know, put a little asterisk on that. But my point being there is always in the initial part of polling data, you'll see Republicans, it never fails, whether it was Scott Walker, whether it was whoever, Republicans always start, you know, a year before the election that's going to take place. Just at the start of the campaign, Republicans are always way down in the polls. And then Republicans always seem to creep back, unless it's like, you know, something where there's, you know, a red state or something. But then Republicans always see, Scott Walker was always down in the polls to whoever he was running for governor until you get close to the election. And the reason being, because once you get close to an election, that's the moment of, quote, truth. Again, asterisk for 2020 and perhaps some elections before that. But that's the moment of truth when these pollsters have to get it right, because they'll look like fools if they don't. They want to get everybody wants to be the one that got it right closest to the actual results of the election. Now, so there's a moment of truth for these polls with elections. There's also a moment of truth for there is no moment of truth for some of these polling things, like concealed carry. Before concealed carry law passed, they did Marquette University Law School did a poll. And because concealed carry wasn't on the ballot, there was no referendum about concealed carry. You never really got to find out what the voters really thought about it. When concealed carry was passed, it didn't have majority support. The Marquette Law School poll, I think, had around, I forget, it was 35 or 45, but it was less than 50% of the people supported concealed carry that were polled in that Marquette Law School poll. But concealed carry never goes to referendum, so there's no moment of truth. There's no reason for the pollsters to try to get it right. I believe that pollsters are right-wing and they won over sample Democrats, but I think they use polling to try to push the narrative that, hey, this is the candidate, man or woman, that is the one that's popular, thinking that saying they're the one that's popular, it's going to attract people just for the fact people that, you know, these low information, these, I call them DASVs, dumbass swing voters, they don't really pay enough attention. So they see someone leading the polls and, oh, that must be the right candidate. I'll support that one. I believe that that's what pollsters do, these right-wing pollsters. They try to use their polling to convince people that that particular candidate is the on the right side of things. It's the most, you know, that's why everybody supports them. But when you get close to an election, that moment of truth is coming. So these pollsters, if they want to have any legitimacy for the next campaign, for the next year, for the next issue, they got to try to get it right, because they will be laughed at. Everybody wants to be the poll that got it right, because that will increase your cred for the next election. But things that never get on the ballot, they never have a need to. So for example, concealed carry, for example, some of these other things that never get a polling question asked. Now, but this is where I'm going with this. The Kyle Rittenhouse case the media is going to do what the media does and try to make it seem like, you know, Kyle's terrible. And I saw that this week, and that's one of my angles is to watch the media coverage and compare that to what we're actually seeing in the trial. But the moment of truth is coming because there's going to be a jury verdict. Now, the news media doesn't necessarily have to get it right with their coverage, because if the jury verdict is acquittal, which we all believe it will be, then there's all kinds of things that the media can do with that. They can claim that this is racist, and they can claim that this is proof that we need to change concealed carry laws, and this is proof that, you know, you can get away with murder in Wisconsin. And there's all kinds of hay that the left will make with this thing. But at the same point, there is going to be that moment of truth when the jury is going to decide. And I think that for some news outlets, there's going to be a little bit of a desire to want to provide some coverage that accurately represents what maybe is going to happen. Because if they sit here and, again, don't get me wrong, if it, the media wouldn't, I wouldn't put it past the media. And certainly it's just their natural proclivity to use these, again, never let a crisis go to waste, never let an outrage go to waste in their mind. But I do think that some media stations might have a propensity to want to share how the trial – Court TV, perfect example. Court TV, I think, wants to get it right. I think Court TV in their analysis, I've seen some of it. The first day I was, like, pretty disappointed in it. I was kind of – but as this case has gone on, even Court TV – and I should get Kevin in here. I'm going to bring Kevin in here now. For those of you Kevin, I – rambled on there without having you live, and now we're getting into the meat of the subject here. But so, Kevin, welcome.
Good evening, Nick. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, and thanks again for being with us. You know, I've been watching the coverage all week, and that's some of my angle is the news coverage, the network coverage versus what actually happened. I do think there's going to be a propensity for the news media, at least some, especially like example Court TV. They're going to, I think, want to get it right. They're going to want to make an accurate representation from their pundits, from their analysts, so that when this case comes back as acquittal, they don't look stupid. Now, I don't think Channel 6 and Channel 12 and Channel 58 and all these other Milwaukee networks, I don't think they care about looking stupid, because I think they will just as soon turn this into, oh, we need to change Wisconsin law. I mean, you can get away with murder. Look at Kyle Rittenhouse, could murder three people and get away with it. So, and the left needs protests. They need riots. They need that as a tool in their case. So you've been in the courtroom. I've been watching as much as I can. I'm going to say about 50-60% of the testimony I've been able to watch. Then I watch the news coverage at night to see how they're representing it. And it seems to me distinctly different. Like Court TV, the first couple of days, I thought, I don't know if you watch any of Court TV's coverage. First couple of days.
A little bit.
Yeah, first couple of days, Court TV, I thought, was really trying to – it seemed like they were all on the side of the prosecution. But then as the next couple of days, I mean, I've heard the guys on Court TV saying, you know, this couldn't be going better for the defense. You got to be really happy for the defense right now. There was one pundit on Court TV that said, you know, they were of the feeling that Rittenhouse was guilty, but even they had changed their mind that they thought this was self-defense. So before we get into all that, back up, start this from the beginning. Monday, we had jury selection. I was surprised jury selection was done in one day. I don't know about you. What was your thoughts at the speed of the jury selection?
Yeah, I think a lot of us were surprised, and I stuck it out. I was there till 7:30. I think the judge was a little bit optimistic, thinking that he could get it done in one day, and I think he wanted to hold himself to that. So we all held out till 7:30. There was a jury. I think that made a lot of folks happy that right away on Tuesday, get right into testimony, and that's exactly what happened. And so the last I heard from another journalist, the prosecution hopes to wrap up Tuesday at the end of the day. So it looks like we're going to have two more days of testimony for the prosecution, which, as you've seen, it's basically been defense type information coming in this whole trial so far. Nothing has come in that points to Kyle doing anything wrong, which is kind of interesting. And that's something that all the pundits are really agreeing on is, are these defense witnesses or what's going on? And I just think when you have such a terrible case to begin with, what choice do you have? You have to try to get out in front of it and call these witnesses, you know, are going to be bad for the prosecution, and maybe hope the jury thinks there might be some kind of secret angle that they're missing. But that's just what it seems like so far.
Yeah, I don't like Banger. I mean, for previous reasons that we've dealt with him with other Wisconsin cases. So I'm not a fan of his. Then again, I sit here and I think you can't make chicken soup out of chicken shit. I mean, he doesn't have a lot to work with. I mean, I don't know what we were expecting from him. Before we get to the opening statements, a little more on the jury selection, and you might have some answers to this because I was actually confused on this. I thought that in most juries, they pick the jury and then they pick the alternates, but you know who the jury is. But in this case, it seemed like they just picked 20, or is it, I think it might be down to 19 or 19, now it's down to 18, but they just picked all of them and they haven't decided who's actually on the jury yet. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, so in Kenosha County, the way they do it is they pick, usually it's 14. In this case, they picked 20 for obvious reasons. It's a more,
right.
It's a bigger case.
Potential,
so what happens,
potential for jury
right.
dismissed.
And we've
yeah.
seen that twice already now. So what happens is that the alternates are not selected until after the closing arguments. So what they do is they have an old-fashioned tumbler in Judge Schrader's courtroom. That's what's called the ceremonial courtroom. So it's the nicest looking. It's the biggest courtroom.
All
it's
the wood,
usually,
all the, yeah.
Exactly. And it's designated for the longest-serving judge, which is Bruce Schrader. So they have this big tumbler. They put all the jurors' names in there, and then they're going to pick. Now that they're down to 18, they will pick six names. And what they'll do is they'll thank them for their service, send them home with a little caveat. Hey, there may be a chance we're going to have to call you back to come. So once you have that 12 and they start deliberating, if for some reason a juror or two or more have to be excused, they can call those alternates back and restart the deliberation process. It's not something that happens terribly often, but it's always a possibility, and Schrader always gives that caveat when he kicks the alternates loose.
And so the alternates have seen all the testimony, they saw all of that. And so, and maybe this is intentional. I don't know if it's done this way in every courtroom in every state, but in every county, but if you don't know if you're on the jury or not, if you knew you were an alternate, maybe the propensity would be to not pay as much attention. Look, I'm just an alternate. I'm never going to end up on the jury.
And that's just it. And I can't imagine the feeling of sitting through 3 weeks or 2 weeks of testimony and then being told, oh, well, thank you so much for your service. Have a great night. I mean, I'm an opinionated person just like you. We want to get our opinions out there. I couldn't
yep.
imagine watching the testimony and having zero influence whatsoever. But,
yeah.
you know, that's just how things have to work, to be fair.
And speaking of not getting to express your opinion, so one juror gets dismissed. There's been two that are dismissed. Did I miss? Was the joke juror, was that the second or the first to get dismissed?
He was the first to be dismissed.
Okay. So I must have missed the second one. It must have been later in the week. Let's start with him, the first one. So this guy, it was Guy, tells a joke to a deputy. My feeling here was the deputies are walking these jurors to their car at the end of the day. This guy wants to, you know, kind of fraternize with the deputy. Hey, I'm on your side kind of thing, you know, be good buddy, you know. And
absolutely.
So by telling that joke, get the deputy to think, oh, he's one of us. He's on our side. He's a Blue Lives Matter kind of guy. And so he tells this joke about, or at least half the joke, I don't know, maybe he finished the joke and they just didn't say it, but it said, you know, why did the police only shoot Jacob Blake seven times? And then the punchline either was said or was supposed to, the news is saying that the punchline was because he only had seven bullets or something like that.
Yeah, and that's what was relayed by the deputy.
If I'm the deputy, I would almost feel like even if let's say the deputy is even of the personal mindset that Kyle is innocent, that it was self-defense, you still can't take the chance because what if that, you know, you don't want – if somehow someone – what if that juror is just saying that to bait you, and if you don't say something to the judge, and then say, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I feel like the deputy, because my first thought was, oh, well, then are there some deputies who are, you know, not, you know, that think Kyle's guilty? Are there some deputies that feel, but either way, I think if you're a deputy, you kind of feel, besides that you might feel that moral responsibility, even in a cover your ass kind of moment, it's like, well, you kind of have to say something either way, because if it comes out that, you know, if that guy says that he, oh yeah, I told the sheriff's deputy this joke and he thought it was funny, and you know, and you know, it could come back to have some kind of little negative consequence perhaps for the deputy if he didn't say something.
Absolutely. And something like this, even though me or you might think, does it really have an outcome on the trial? Maybe not, but that's such a huge issue for an appeal. If somehow there was a directed verdict or a verdict notwithstanding the verdict, which are two appealable situations that the prosecutors can do, which I don't think either are likely, but, you know, in this case, they're trying to do everything by the book just to make sure the public is satisfied with the verdict because, you know, there's going to be people that are going to, you know, blame. They already have things they're going to blame. Well, they let, you know, they didn't let the prosecutors call these, you know, criminals victims that were shot and killed.
Yep.
You know, attacking a 17-year-old boy. You know, they didn't let
The videos in.
Yeah,
the videos
they were called rioters, which I might add, all that fuss about calling them rioters and looters, I have yet to see a defense attorney refer to either of the two decedents or the third, Gage, be referred to as a looter or a rioter. And that just goes to show you that that motion was not a typical motion, and it was a motion that was meant to instill this sense of bias in the community. And it worked. I mean, everybody was talking about it, right? All over the country, people were talking about, oh, this, you know, conservative judge will let the defense call the victims rioters and looters, but not victims. Well, they didn't refer to them as rioters or looters because that's just not something that rolls off the tongue. It's, you know, it's evident that at least one was rioting and looting, but it's just... It was a bizarre motion. It worked for the PR reason he wanted it to, but it just goes to show you that it wasn't necessary because these defense attorneys are seasoned. They're very sharp, and they haven't been using those words anyways. It's been the witnesses, including police officers, that have been saying, yeah,
right.
You know, the rioters, the looters, the dangerous people out there. So, you know, that was much ado about nothing, and like I said, they're looking for excuses. So, you know, if you have a joke like this that goes unacted upon, that's going to be the excuse. And so this juror was an older man, probably in his 60s, early 70s. He had a motorized cart. So I don't know if he had a tough time walking or some kind of physical ailment, but he really was upset that he got kicked off. And he pled with the judge for a minute, you know.
Yep.
You know, hey, this wasn't about the case. Just let me stay on. And the judge says, you know, I can't let you stay in. And the judge made the right call.
And he made the right call. Yeah.
Yeah. If it was a juror that said something about, you know,
Black Lives Matter.
Why did the 17-year-old carry a gun? You know, something like that. Me and you would be upset if he wasn't excused. So it's only fair that if you are clear with your bias, you got to be removed. And in this case, it's a shame because he was a likely vote for the defense, in my opinion.
And a shame, I agree, because that's the first thing I thought was, well, there was a vote for acquittal. But the good thing for me was that at least that tells me that the jury selection process wasn't so tainted that someone who would judge the facts objectively and by, you know, that clearly people got onto the jury that weren't, because my concern was, look, if they can rig a presidential election, they can stack a jury. They can make sure that everybody that got called for that jury service was a lib from Kenosha, you know, and so that didn't happen because clearly there was someone that got through the question process onto the jury that wasn't, you know, a rank lib who was going to be convict no matter what type thing. So
yeah, and you know, and along those grounds, people in this community, you would see a higher percentage of liberals who actually side with the defense just because it really hit home to us. So you have some liberals out here, some friends of mine who lean left or reach far to the left, who kind of look past party lines and say, you know what, this kid, you know, it's a shame that the weight of, you know, the safety of this city was on the back of a 17-year-old kid. I hope he walks. And I'm hearing that from liberals. So, you know, other parts of the world, when they just see it on TV, they don't really, you know, it's not real to them. But out here, there's a larger amount of liberals, I think, that could be swayed to say, you know what, this kid's not guilty.
And that's what I said last year after he was charged. I said to myself, look, find 12 people in Kenosha, because I heard from friends in Kenosha that don't even own guns that have, you know, thought about it. But then that night they were calling me, those nights they're like, Nick, I got my concealed carry license at your free class, but I never went and bought a gun. I need one. Where can I go get one? And I'm like, yeah, good luck now. I mean, but everybody in Kenosha was there. Everybody in Kenosha knew how bad it was. And especially the closer you were to the city versus, you know, someone west of 94 or something, but everybody in Kenosha knew, everybody in Kenosha had that fear. Other people in Kenosha stayed up all night guarding their own houses. So yeah, finding a jury there, it would be very difficult to find people who don't understand what that was. And so, yeah, that was my initial thought, is you're never going to find 12. You'll find a few, but you're never going to find 12 people to convict him in Kenosha. So,
never.
Folks
like me and you who have a gun safe, you know, with shotguns and rifles and ARs and you know, pistols. So liberals were the crazies until, you know, the riots come or the zombies. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're the ones that they come, right? Hey, you got something I can borrow, right? You know, so.
Yep.
You know, once the what they said, can, oh, come on, you know, what do you need, you know, a magazine with 30 rounds for? I don't know, when your city gets burnt to the ground, that's one possibility why you might need 30 rounds in a magazine, you know?
Yeah, precisely. Did so then the second jury was dismissed. I didn't hear this one. What happened with that one?
So before the jury came out, the judge had told both sides, both counsel, that there was a woman who just wasn't feeling good and that she was pregnant. And I don't think that's something you can argue with on either side. And neither side kind of gave any fuss, but she didn't appear to be pregnant. So she was probably earlier in her pregnancy, but that's not something to mess with. You know, could it have been just a woman who doesn't, you know, want that responsibility? Sure. But in that case, you just can't argue with it. You know, we're still going to have 8 alternates. So, neither side gave a fuss and she was dismissed.
I keep hearing on the news, every time the news media talks about the jury, and this is again the spin you're going to get from the news, the news fiction, fake news. Every time they talk about jury, so it's now there's, well, it's now down to 18, but when I was hearing these reports earlier, it was 19 jurors and then only one person of color. That every single news report that talked about the news, only one person of color. Again, this isn't even a race case. This is, you know, there's Kyle Rittenhouse is white. The people that he shot was white. There's no, you know, so, but it's just the news media can't let that one go. I mean, there's only one person of color and then just, you know, trying to make a race issue out of this case where there's really nothing there on the race side, aside from the fact that this was a Black Lives Matter protest during the day that turns into riots at night, but go ahead.
And sure. And that reminds me, so there's this, there's a Supreme Court case called Batson versus Kentucky, where jurors are not supposed to strike, prosecutors or defense attorneys can't strike a juror because of their race only. So you can't strike the only Hispanic dude or only Black dude just because of their color. You have to have something else. But what I'm told by many defense attorneys is that who's guilty of that is Binger. Binger will oftentimes strike Black, brown, other races simply because of their race. And what's interesting in this case is there was one Black woman in the pool of jurors that I saw, and she was struck. I don't know at this time if it was from the defense or from the prosecution. There's no way probably that we'll ever know. But, you know, Binger, that's one of those things that Binger does. It's not, it's tough to prove. How would you ever prove his reasoning for striking a juror? But he does that pretty often, I'm told. And yes, there was one African-American woman who was struck. And then there's one gentleman, one of the younger ones. This is a very, very old jury. And when I say old, I mean, I'm 36 years old, but I mean, we're talking, there's 3 or 4, I would say, under the age of 50. And the rest are over 50. There's a few elderly folks on this jury. So it's, I would hope to think that would bring more wisdom to the jury.
Which isn't atypical, I think, for juries, because the kind of people that end up jury service, I think they do tend to skew older, I'm not mistaken, in most cases, too. So the jury as a whole, you said, older demographic, it's split male, female, relatively close. It's not evenly split, but relatively close, if I think correct.
Yeah, I think right now I think we started with 20. We lost two. We lost a man and a woman. So it was 11 to 9. So now I guess it's 10 to 8.
Yeah.
10 so women, 8 men. Yeah. Pretty close, yeah.
Anything else that just, and the answer to this might be no, but does anything else that strike you about the jury? Anything as you look at any particular, is there any one juror who you think strikes you as a, you know, I mean, obviously, I don't think any jurors show up. I went to juries. I got called for jury duty one time. I didn't want to get put on jury, so I wore my NRA shirt to the jury duty, and first thing's a gun case, I got struck.
That'll happen. That'll do the trick. You know, which I think I came up with some creative thoughts that I'm sure other folks thought of, but I counted how many jurors were wearing the masks. So the judge told the jury very, very bluntly, you don't have to wear a mask in here if you don't want to. It doesn't matter if you're vaccinated or not. If you don't want to wear a mask, you don't have to. If you do want to wear a mask, I will provide you with one. And I believe I counted 6 out of the 20 that chose to wear a mask, which made me a little optimistic because, of course, you have the exceptions to all rules. But I looked at that as somebody who's going to say, screw it, I'm not wearing a mask, probably a little more likely to lean to the right. And somebody who says, you know what, I'm wearing a mask, typically, you know, would tend to lean a little more left. And I know that's not going to be an exact science, but it's something you can look at. And I agree with you.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's a tell.
I will say, too, that this jury seems to be taking their job very seriously. They're taking copious notes. They're paying attention, not much yawning, not much, nobody nodding off, anything like that. So that's also good. And, you know, the Kyle had a jury expert on his side, and I actually sat just a couple seats away from her, and she looked certainly like a professional. I mean, she had a quad fold leather binder, and she had, you know, all the seating charts, and on each seat she had a stack of sticky notes, so when a juror got struck she could just pull it off and stack it to the side. And you know, before the strikes were made, she consulted with the attorneys. So I think and then that's a lot more than the defense or than the prosecution did. They just kind of put their heads together. Tom is not really paying attention to Krause, you know, the attorney that looks like the Penguin from Batman Returns. So he's just, you know, he's letting them take the softball, witnesses like, you know, the fiance of the deceased, the easy ones. And speaking of the fiance of if you want to go to a different topic, just let me know. But Binger made some crucial mistakes so far. And when I say mistakes, I'm talking about opening the door to things that the defense would otherwise be barred from bringing up. So right away in the opening statements, Binger talked about Rosenbaum not having his medication. That was a stupid move on his end because now, boom, the door is open. So she was asked about the mental health of Joseph Rosenbaum. And she did this in a voir dire. I don't even know how to say that, but outside of the jury's presence. Yeah, voir dire. So outside of the jury's presence, basically Tom says, well, you know, Binger, I call him T. Claire. His middle name is Claire, and that matches his temperament. You know, he's feminine. He's like a, what do you call it, metrosexual, just a weird
dude.
And
it's funny you said that because just his hairstyle, like going with the, I don't know what the millennials call it, but the unicorn hairstyle, it just, I don't know. I hope he's not listening to the show. I've got a friend who's in his probably 50s and he does that. Like, he's in a band. He thinks he's young. Sure. He still thinks he's in his 20s. I just laughed about,
you know,
Binger's hair because,
you know, Tom, you know, who doesn't like Star Wars? I'm a Star Wars fan. If it's on TV, I'm watching it. I've got the DVDs. But, you know, he's got a Star Wars sticker on his car. He wore a Star Wars pin for one day of the trial, a Darth Vader mug. I mean, he's like Star Wars to the max. So I'm assuming he's probably a Trekkie, too. I mean, that's cool. But, I mean, he takes it just a little too far. But anyways, back to the medication issue. So the judge basically said, look, she can't speculate what medications he takes or what he takes them for. So let's talk to her outside of the jury's presence. She knew every single med he took. She knew why he took it. So that was a crucial mistake. So the jury got to hear that this guy was on all kinds of medicines that I'd never heard of for bipolar, all kinds of other ailments. So, I mean, I guess one could argue, you know, you might get some sympathy from the jury, but I mean, I think it's clear. I mean, the way I look at his actions that night were kind of like a suicide by a cop, you know, where he's saying, kill me, N-word. I think he wanted to die or just didn't give a shit if he died or not that night. And he did.
I was going to bring this up later, but since you've brought up, I'll just hit it now. It's become clear to me, like, that when you talk about the bios of these guys that were shot, Rosenbaum, Grosskreutz, and Huber, these guys have they clearly have no interest in, well, I can't say about Huber for sure, but I know for sure Rosenbaum and Grosskreutz, these guys don't give a shit about Black Lives Matter. They don't give a shit about the protest subject medium of the whole George Floyd thing, or excuse me, Jacob Blake thing. They were there because Grosskreutz is a cop hater, and he was just there to, and same thing with Rosenbaum. Those guys were just there for the mayhem. They were, and that might not be surprising to us, but I think to some other people that think, well, they were there. No, I mean, these people show up to these things just to, because they're mad at the world. And that's what Grosskreutz strikes me as. He's a dirtbag that just, he's been in tons of trouble. He's mad at the world, hates the cops because he's been in trouble with them so many times, and just wanted to go to Kenosha and just vent some of his rage. And same thing with Rosenbaum. These guys, their association, and that's why I feel like the Black Lives Matter movement, aside from the fact that they need riots and protests as a tactic in their thing, they don't care about these victims, the dead people, the attackers, Kyle's attackers. I say victims in quote because that's what they want to call them. They don't care about them. It's because they're not on their side. These are not Black Lives Matter, you know, sympathizers in terms of these guys. And at least for those two. And I don't know if you have any disagreement with that. But at Huber, I didn't get quite as much. Maybe I was missing some of that. I was on the phone or something when he was being discussed. But that was the impression I got. These guys clearly have no interest in the subject matter of Black Lives Matter, Jacob Blake, George Floyd.
Yeah, and I agree with you. In fact, to scream the N-word at a Black Lives Matter type rally, I mean, first of all, it tells me that he doesn't really care about the Black Lives Matter movement, but also that he's just, again, goes to the, he doesn't care if he survives that night. You know what I mean? The N-word, it's stupid, but...
Yeah, just an angry dude.
Yep. And speaking of Gage, you may have known that he was out on bond until last week for his second DUI and carrying a firearm while intoxicated.
Yep.
And just seemingly, suspiciously, Evers appointed judge dismissed the case. There was a motion to suppress because the defense attorney says, well, having a air freshener hanging from your mirror and not using turn signal is not probable cause, which I think either of those independently constitutes probable cause for a stop. And the judge agreed and dismissed his charge. So as you know, under Wisconsin law, if a witness has an open case, that's fair game. So he could have been asked, do you have a current case open right now? And he'd have to say, yeah, DUI number 2 and carrying a firearm while intoxicated. That Tony Evers appointee gave a big gift to the Rittenhouse prosecution, and pretty disgusting.
Because he's on the witness list, Grosskreutz.
Yep. So he's probably going to testify tomorrow or Tuesday, and he's got no open cases now.
I want to finish up real quick on the openings. Just my general impression of the openings. First, Binger's opening. It seems like Binger was going to try to prosecute this on the whole sentiment of the Black Lives Matter movement thing. He talked about, you know, in his opening, life is more important than property, which is just, again, platitudes he blamed outsiders coming into Kenosha trying to, you know, curry not sympathy with the jury, but yeah, we're in this together. It was these outsiders that came in because Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, everybody knows lived in Illinois, and it's just outsiders, besides the fact that Kyle has a whole lot of connection to the area. He said, Binger said in his opening. He talked about, you know, if your response was to move in response to the riots, that was okay. If your response was to board up windows, that was okay. But then he didn't say it this way, but he did say that about, you know, if your choice was to move, it would, or your choice was to board up your windows, you know, that's a legitimate action. But, shooting someone, that was the point he was trying to make. But, you know, it's okay to, if you wanted to leave the city or if you wanted to board up your windows, but using self-defense, nope, that's not okay. You know, that was what he was saying, when life is more important than property, and which it is. But Kyle wasn't defending property. He was defending his life at this point. But it seemed like Binger in his open was, and still throughout, was trying to litigate the case on the media narrative of that it was just protesting. And it's just that typical liberal dumb down the narrative, you know, bumper sticker logic. And he even made some comment, two other nights, no one got shot except when Kyle shot, or no one, all these protests, all these property damage, just property damage. He didn't talk about the guy that got hit in the head with the brick trying to defend his, you know, just property damage. And then, but then Kyle shows up and now people are dead. That was like, that was the summation, I think, of his opening. That was just trying to dumb it down. I was waiting for him to try to come up with some, like, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit, like, saying type thing. And he didn't quite get there, but that's what he was. It was just that dumb it down to a bumper sticker thing that everyone's going to nod their head at.
Absolutely. And you know what? That might work on a jury from San Diego or New York, but in Kenosha, that's not going to be quite as effective as he thinks it would be, because we all experienced what was going on out there. And here's the fact, right? I think we talked about this last week. If you set a building on fire, you're risking somebody dying. You know, if one of those jackasses who lit a building on fire, if there was somebody sleeping in there and they died, they'd be charged with murder. So I don't see why burning a building down doesn't really constitute attempted murder. I mean, you're doing something that has a high likelihood of severely injuring or killing somebody, but lucky for the community, everybody made it out of those buildings alive. Thank God. Yeah. But it could have easily been something different. But yeah, it's that, you know, who cares about property? I mean, it's not like, you know, the people's livelihoods matter, and, you know, if somebody has to go bankrupt, I mean, go ahead, you know, put the guns away and go bankrupt and lose all your money. Your kids don't have to go to college. You know, that type of crap that, you know, reasonable people just don't believe. Only the far left believe those type of talking points. I mean, everybody has a right to defend their business, their livelihood, you know, and with force if necessary. You know, like the one guy, I've never heard this before, you probably have, but he said, shout, shove, show, shoot. So he said, you know, somebody gets in your face or threatens you, you shout, you tell them to get away. If that doesn't work, you shove them. If they still persist, you show them your weapon. And if they still try to attack you, you shoot. You know, something, you know, it's starting with, you know, lethal force, you know, not even any force at all. But like you said, Kyle wasn't defending property at this moment. He was defending his life, because any reasonable person knows he would have gotten his ass kicked or he would have been killed at the very minimum.
Yep. And severe bodily harm is not just death, that, you know, severe bodily harm, great bodily harm, you can defend yourself. Someone made the comment here on the chat, and I think I was going to mention the same thing. You know, Binger, a lot of the witnesses, they just seem to offer no relevant information. And then other witnesses for the defense. So, well, let's finish up on the openings. Even the Court TV people said that Binger got his ass handed to him on the opening statements. The defense did a way better job. They used video to set up the whole sequence of events and set the stage, and then Binger sat there and said, well, if I'd have known they could use it. Binger, he sounded like a whiny little bitch.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who's ever been to any type of trial, I mean, I've been to dozens of trials, and usually if I'm a witness, I have to stay outside, but, you know, when I'm sitting second chair for an attorney at a trial or just witnessing one, it is very incredibly typical to show exhibits during opening statements. I mean, him trying to pretend like he didn't know that was so disingenuous and laughable that most people probably might, you know, believe him because they don't know how things work. But anybody who knows a little bit about the legal system knows that was just useful shit.
And the Court TV folks said that right after they said that to they were kind of mocking Binger that he would make that comment, and that they were essentially just, you know, they didn't say it like this, but they were essentially saying he got his ass handed to him in the openings. So then we get to the witnesses. Someone made the comment in the chat here, you know, Binger seemed to call a few witnesses that offered no relevant information. And that's the same thing. But I think we are all sitting there thinking he's going to have something, you know, he must have something. And then as we start to see, like, he doesn't have anything. I mean, he kept some of the questions he'd ask. I mean, there's a thing that I've heard over and over, don't ask questions that you don't already know the answer to. And
that's exactly Binger, the same thing with politicians.
Yeah. Binger asked questions. And I thought to myself, why would he ask that? That's not good for him, and sometimes he's just saying, you know, and what did you see next? And then the witness goes on to say something that's very favorable to the defense. And, but it just, I kept getting this feeling. There was times I sat there and I honestly thought this to myself, like, I thought, is Binger trying to throw this? Like, is he just mad he got assigned this case and he's trying to throw it? I mean, that's how bad he was.
And that's the thing too is, and a lot of it, we can't overlook just some of the easy ones like laziness. So Nathan DeBruin was an amateur photographer who took tons of good pictures for the ATF and for the FBI. They were able to prosecute a lot of cases because of this kid. I call him a kid, but he's about my age. But this guy was 10 feet away from Kyle when he shot Huber and Grosskreutz. And Binger interviewed him 3 weeks before the trial and decided, oh, crap, I can't use him. He should have been interviewed months ago if Binger wanted to present a good prosecution. So I think a lot of it is laziness, you know, like you said, and you nailed it. As a prosecutor, as a defense attorney, you never ask a question unless you don't know the answer, unless they really don't know, but it's imperative that they find out. But, yeah, there were so many questions that, you know, when he asked McGinnis, he said, so, you know, you said that you thought, you know, Rosenbaum was going to harm Kyle, but that's just all speculation. And McGinnis says, well, he said, fuck you, and reached for his gun. And that just blew up Twitter. I mean, they were posting that video like he wasn't ready for that. And McGinnis is a sharp guy.
Yeah, he was. I'll just be honest, because I don't spend as much. I see the Daily Caller thing, but I didn't know Daily Caller was a, quote, right-wing news source. But McGinnis, I thought to myself, I think he's probably been one of the best witnesses so far in terms of just well-spoken. He's a smart guy. He's articulate. He expresses his points very well, doesn't let Binger roll him in any way. I mean, I thought he schooled Binger and made Binger look foolish several times. And then I also thought, and I don't know the process, maybe, is did Binger depose this guy? Because he should have known the things.
No depositions in criminal cases in Wisconsin.
Okay,
So when I'm working for a defense attorney and he wants me to interview some witnesses, if I request an interview and they say no, that's it, I'm done. Same thing with the police. Police want to go out there, or prosecutor wants to interview a witness and they say no, boop, it's over. No depositions in criminal cases, which a lot of defense attorneys don't like that, because trials can be cut in half if you'd allow that, you know?
And I spend all of Wisconsin Carey's time in civil cases. So that's why I'm sitting here thinking, didn't they depose this guy to know what he was going to say? So interesting. Let's see, what else did I have? So we went through defense witnesses. I thought McGinnis was one of the, you know, highlights of the week, his testimony, which again came out, I think it was after McGinnis's testimony about the lunging and stuff, and he kept trying to get him to say he was falling. He's like, well, you know, falling, lunging, I'm using those terms, but I'm telling you, he was lunging. And after that, the Court TV pundits were even saying, there was one guy of Court TV, and I think he was black. They have four people on their little panel, their split screen panel quad, four people. Then the one said, you know, I've been a holdout. I've been the one that is like this is, but he's like, I'm even after seeing McGinnis's testimony, I'm thinking this is self-defense written all over it. And then to this point, I've been thinking that Kyle was guilty. And I mean, this is all the people on Court TV saying this.
And here's the thing, you have a sandwich here. Just him lunging for the barrel of the gun alone would be enough for self-defense. just him saying earlier in the night, if I get you alone, I'm going to fucking kill you, alone would be enough for self-defense. But when you have those two things in the sandwich, it's overkill. It makes Kyle doubly as within his rights to defend
reasonable,
himself.
Reasonable, justified, yeah.
I mean, when someone tells you they're going to kill you and then they go 90% of the way, I don't know how it could have been a stronger self-defense case with what we've heard so far. And the only thing
and this
about
is the prosecution's case. We're still in the prosecution part. We haven't even gotten to the defense.
The prosecution scored a couple little points, and I hate to admit that, but they got McGinnis choked up because McGinnis is a good human being, and McGinnis took his shirt off, tried to, you know, apply some kind of tourniquet, tried to help this kid, this mentally ill, you know, guy who just got shot, helped him get to the hospital, and watch this man die, you know. But here, and I've said this before, whenever you have somebody who dies, you know, sometimes we'll joke around and say, yeah, one less pedophile on the earth. But it's sad because there are people who love that, you know, little shithead, right? So him being sad and choking up and saying, you know, I'll never forget that. And he told him, hey, you know, you're going to get through this and I'm going to buy you a beer. That's because he's a freaking human being. You know, McGinnis is a human being. And that's how any person with half of a heart would act. You know, nobody wants to watch somebody die, even if it's justified. You know, if somebody broke into your house and messed with, you know, a family member, a loved one, and you had to take their life, you wouldn't feel happy about it. That'd tear you up. You know, that just says that you're human. Just like, you know, when Kyle cried, you know, in the ENIAC police department and people are, oh, look at the, you know, the kid's crying. Well, he's a human being. And that shows me that he values life for, you know, for crying out loud. So, I mean, they scored some points there and, you know, they wanted to, you know, hear from his great aunt and, you know, talk about how great of a kid he was. And that's really, I mean, they have to present a prosecution. They have to present a case, even though it's a bad case. The facts are not on their side. They have to try, I mean, ethically. So, you know, and then the aunt, I don't know if you saw that night, but she almost really got him in trouble, too, because they tried to ask about some instance when Huber was like a 8-year-old and tried to run towards a house that he thought was going to explode. So they wanted to paint him as this hero that oftentimes ran into danger to save people. And the defense objected. They sent the jury out and the defense says, hey, look, if you're going to try to paint this kid as a hero, we have two criminal complaints, one where he held a knife to his brother's neck, sliced his ear half off, one where he beat up his sister. Go ahead and ask that if you want to, but then you're opening the door for this. And the judge says, well, you're right. So then, you know, the Penguin said, okay, we'll withdraw the question. So that was almost one of those instances where they just made a terrible mistake. And I'll give – and it almost – I would have preferred the defense not showing their cards. But they didn't want to take that risk that they let in the hero thing, but then later the judge says, eh, you can't get these criminal complaints in. But I would have loved for the jury to hear that Anthony Huber was a violent, you know, felon. I would have loved to have heard that.
Yeah, and the truth is, they may already know, you know. I mean, there's
they
so
could.
Much coverage of this, they may already know.
If they read the Kenosha County Eye, they definitely know.
Yeah, and there's this notion that, you know, that I kept sensing from Binger that, like, and part of it maybe was in his open, part of it is just as that you know, Kyle should have stood down. He should have, you know, he didn't have to do what he did. He should have, and I sit there and I think to myself, I mean, the people who should have stood down were this dropkick guy with the, is that what they call him, dropkick guy? Is that what they, the what they call
yeah,
him?
Yeah,
the non-complaining.
Non-complaining witness. So in other words, they're saying, this guy didn't even come forward and say, hey, I got a gun pointed at me. And they're listing him as a, quote, victim to the second degree reckless endangering safety, which makes no sense.
Yeah. I mean, the people who should have stood down, dropkick guy, Huber, Grosskreutz, because after this, and I'm talking after, because Kyle's running away towards the police after he shot Rosenbaum and people are yelling, get him, and he's running away. They made it seem like Kyle should have stood down when these people were trying to disarm him or something. It's like, no, the people that were trying, even if that's what they were trying to do. I mean, when you're trying to dropkick someone, are you trying to disarm them? Or, you know, even if they were just trying to disarm, they thought they were trying to disarm a mass shooter. The people who should have stood down were Grosskreutz, who was running next to Kyle before. And I can't wait for the cross-examination of Grosskreutz, because he's running next to Kyle. He knew he wasn't a threat to him because, you know, he's Kyle said he's going to, it's on video, he's going to turn himself into the police. He said that to Grosskreutz as he's running next to him. And, you know, I'm going to turn myself in. And at least that's what I heard, if I heard correctly. And then, so, I mean, this notion that if anybody should have stood down, it was Grosskreutz, it was Dropkick Guy, it was Huber, because they were the ones trying to, and, you know, people talk about, oh, Kyle was playing vigilante. I mean, there you got Grosskreutz, Huber. I mean, Grosskreutz pulls a gun on Kyle. And Kyle's the one trying to play vigilante. Kyle ran away from Rosenbaum and didn't shoot until he got cornered. Kyle's running away from Grosskreutz, and Grosskreutz pulls a gun on him. And they sit there, the news talking about Kyle's a vigilante. I mean, Grosskreutz pulls a gun on Kyle and runs after him while Kyle had already passed him and is running away. It just, you know, this prosecution's case is so weak. And so, you know, I sit there and I think, I think Binger's terrible, and he seems like he's got no angles. He tries to admit inadmissible stuff, and he's either, or maybe it's both, a shitty prosecutor, or he expected a cakewalk and he didn't get the cakewalk. You know, I think that's one thing. If there's one thing that sometimes conservatives, we get challenged so much, we have to defend ourselves so much, we never get the easy, we never get the media assist, we never get the media accomplice, you know, as I think as Rush Limbaugh used to say, the accomplice media, or maybe that's confusing. Maybe that's Jay Weber that always talked about the accomplice media. But we never get the favorable treatment media. We've always got the bumper stickers. Our logic doesn't fit in a bumper sticker. We have to be deeper and more analytical. And I think sometimes, in terms of, you know, being tested and hardened and good, the libs don't get that because they don't get challenged. They don't get challenged by the media. Republicans are used to being interviewed and gotcha questions and all this stuff. And then liberals aren't. So I use that example, but also I think from a prosecution standpoint, in this case, I think all the media attention maybe kind of conditioned Binger to think this was just going to be a cakewalk, because it's just this, everybody, you know, is, if you spend your time hanging out with libs and watching the news, it just seems like everybody hates Kyle.
And that's a good point. If you can visualize T. Claire's, you know, Twitter feed or Facebook feed, you're not going to see Louder with Crowder or Fox News or, you know, Ben Shapiro. You're going to see all these, you know, liberals. And so all he's seeing is, oh, this terrorist white supremacist Kyle is going to prison. And I think you're onto something. You know, he gets emboldened by that. You know, this is going to be easy. All I got to do is, you know, show them the autopsy photos and show, you know, Rosenbaum dying and the video of him shooting these people and tell him that he was 17. He had no business being there. You know, I'm going to win. So yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, it's funny because he keeps asking every witness, you know, did you see anybody shoot anybody? Well, no. You know, and then you had the officer Moretti who says, well, I heard shooting the entire night coming from all sides of my patrol car. So, I mean, everything he tries to, you know, these little things, you know. Another funny part was this ex, I don't know if he was in the Army or whatever, but the prosecution said, well, were you intimidated by Joe Rosenbaum? You know, did you view him as a threat? And the guy's like, oh, no, not at all. You know, he's kind of trying to be a tough guy, which I get.
Right.
It. You know,
right. Yep.
He doesn't want to look like a pussy in front of a million people on court TV, you know, because he's got training and, you know, he had an AR-15. And then, well, the defense says, well, what if you would have been alone with him? Then would he have been a threat? He said, well, no, you know, well, what if he grabbed your gun? Then would you think he was a threat? Oh, absolutely. You know, so that was an interesting witness too. And, you know, the car lot brothers who lied their asses off kind of disappointed me a little bit. And that's a win for the prosecution for now, because remember the whole narrative is Kyle was somewhere he wasn't asked to be, he wasn't needed. But I can tell you, I know that those brothers were lying. I know for 100% positive fact. And I know that the prosecutors will find a way to get it in there, but I just want to make sure they do, because that's important, because that's a big part of that, liberal talking point. Is he was somewhere he wasn't asked to be. Well, for crying out loud, they had keys to the place. They had access to the roof.
That was
from
the thing I was
going to
bring up. Yeah, yeah. They were on the roof of the building without permit. Come on, it doesn't even pass the sniff test. And like, and that's what I was watching some other stuff. Paul Bucher, they had him on Upfront the night before. So this was Channel 12's Sunday morning thing. So there's Sunday morning before the trial starts. And they have Paul Bucher on there, and he makes his comment. He's, you know, why did you come here with a gun when you weren't even invited? And that was what Paul Bucher says about Kyle Rittenhouse. And I'm like, but first off, he was invited. And there's reports that he was invited. I mean, maybe that's going to be challenged with this, you know, these lying brothers on the stand and stuff. But I mean, he was invited. And you don't need an invitation. The Second Amendment doesn't self-defense. A free person doesn't need an invitation to go somewhere.
Well, that's exactly the case. Where were the invitations for these scumbags who were lighting buildings on fire from out of state? You know, I mean, he had just as much a right to be there as anybody else, period. You know,
period. Yep.
But
yep.
That being said, I'd like to see the defense kind of shore that up and make that clear.
Yeah, and I think there were. And that's the funny thing is, so another, as I wrap up that comment that I was making, I think that one of the things that we're going to look back at some point, you know, whether it's 2024 or whenever, when we, you know, Trump's new social media and we finally get past this big tech censorship and all the stuff that we've tried that we conservatives have had to punch through, is it makes us better and stronger and more skilled at argument, at debate, at proving a point. And liberals, they get weaker and weaker because they don't have to prove a point. They don't have to debate. They don't have to argue because the liberals never challenge liberals. They never get challenged by the news. They never get challenged by anybody. And that makes them weaker because they never have to defend their positions. Joe Biden doesn't have to defend his positions. You know, any of these, you know, they just with the softball questions media. So that makes you weaker. And in the long term, I think that's going to come back to be a benefit for conservatives is the stuff that we have to struggle through to get our point across, to get to punch through the suffocating media, to punch through the spin and the lies and the media. All that stuff makes us stronger and more better communicators. And liberals don't have to because they've always had their point made for them by the news, and they've all, you know, they don't have to. And the bumper sticker logic is just, you know, these very simple comments. When Bush lied or when Clinton lied, no one died. I mean, just those stupid Bain arguments that don't make you a smarter person, don't make you a more rational, logical debater and convincer and analytical type person, logic based person. So that's something that I see Binger's tactics, and I think I can't help but feel like he's dumbed down because, and even for a lot of prosecutors in many of their cases, they come up against people that don't know how to defend themselves, don't know how to make an argument, don't know how to, and in a situation where it's like I say, going to court to fight a traffic ticket, it's the presumptive benefit of the doubt is with the cop, you know, it's all in the cop's favor. You have to be really, really, really good. But so then you get someone who is versed in defending themselves and making these logical arguments, and Binger's not up to that task. And I think that's what we're seeing here is that that Kyle's attorneys are much more smarter, more strategic, more planned, more just better. They're just better. They're more skilled, more, you know, and –
yeah, they're sharp, they're better, and more importantly, they have the facts on their side. It's like my dad always told me, you know, when it comes to gambling, I'd rather be lucky than good any day, right? And in this case, an attorney would rather have the facts on their side than be the better attorney any day because, you know, and it just makes them look so much better because everything is on their side. So when you have good facts on your side and you have good articulate, you know, pit bull like attorneys. I mean, it's fun to watch and it's very effective.
And I was just about to segue into another thing, and now it's skipped my mind when I started talking about that. Because we were talking about the this anyway. It's going to come to me in a second here. This next angle I was going to go to, but so prosecution is going to be wrapping up their case. We've got we're going to hear from Grosskreutz. I know what it was. This is where I was going. There's almost always in every case, there's a motion made after the prosecution finishes their case that the defense attorneys make a motion that the state hasn't met their burden of proof. And it's almost always just a formality. It's almost always just like,
yes.
I forget what that's called, but it's a motion to dismiss based upon that the state hasn't met their burden. And every defense attorney does it. And the judge always, it's almost like a reflex, says, nope, we're going to have to put on
a motion for a directed verdict. And what's funny is they do it every time, because if they do not, then they can be attacked later for, you know, inassistance of counsel. So yeah, that it's been punished so often that every attorney does it every time, just so that it can never come back to haunt them.
It makes me wonder in this case, if the judge, and he won't do it, but I was starting to think to myself, you know, they could make that argument. And if the judge agreed with it, I mean, I think the judge should agree. I don't think they've met their burden of proof in any regard.
No chance.
I think the judge, but I don't think the judge, because the media, the left, I mean, and the judge isn't, I don't think he's thinking in that regard, but I think the judge would feel like, no, I have to let them put their case on. And I don't think the judge wants to put himself in that position of you know, dismissing the case. I don't think that. But if there's ever a case where the judge could grant it, I'm like, this is the one.
and Schrader has done that. I mean, that's not a non-option for him. But in this case, we mentioned earlier, the only two instances where the prosecutors can appeal would be a directed verdict after the prosecution rests. And the other would be a judgment notwithstanding the verdict. If the jury finds him guilty and the judge says, no, I'm going to issue a judgment notwithstanding the verdict, you know, all charges dismissed. Those are the only two instances in where the prosecution can appeal. So the judge probably is thinking about that too. Well, if I just dismiss this case, they can appeal it. And, you know, maybe the Court of Appeals that has at least some liberals on it, if you get the right combination, maybe they'll overturn it. Maybe they got to try the kid again, you know? So,
yeah.
It would be interesting if he did, but, I think you're right. I don't think he's likely to do that. And I think that probably the defense might not want to, they might want to present their evidence to make it even stronger. They got a self-defense expert coming in and they've got that, amateur photographer. I can't wait to see what they bring in.
And then I think one of the and maybe this might be Wisconsin right now had, this was quite a while ago, but maybe it was around January where they came out and said, oh, this defense witness blows the whole case wide open. I forget who that is now, but that's a person who I think is going to be called by the defense. Does this ring a bell?
I'm trying to pull up the witness list right now, but it does not ring a bell.
I'll have to find it.
Unless you're talking about PhD guy.
No, this was a guy who was like, I'll find it for next week's show, because it'll be, I think the Wisconsin right now. Oh, I know where I was. I'll look that up while we're talking about our next thing, because it'll take me a second to fly through and find it here. But so defense is prosecution is finishing up. For I'd say this to anybody who's watching, and if all you're watching of this is you're getting the news media rehash every night and you're a little frustrated by it, take heart in knowing that the jury's not seeing, you know, this spin that you're hearing from the news media. If all you're doing is watching network news at night, you know, don't feel like this is not going well, because it's going very well. It doesn't matter if we're overconfident or not overconfident, because anything can happen with in this 2021 and stolen elections, and you know, anything can happen. But if you're watching the network news and you're frustrated that it sounds like it's not going well for Kyle, don't be frustrated right now, because it's going very well for Kyle so far.
I'd like to see the Vegas odds. You know if they're doing anything on this? I mean,
I don't know if someone was telling me that, I mean, in England, they even bet on United States elections because they bet on everything over there. And I thought like all the odds flipped on the Virginia governor's race a week or something before the election. And so I don't know if they've got, I don't know if in this country you can take bets on outcomes of court cases, But I'm pretty sure in England you can, because I think over in England you can bet on anything because they bet on United States elections. there's odds makers and underwriters in those, but or not underwriters, but odds makers in those. But if they do, I got to think that the odds are, if they weren't already in Kyle's favor, have massively shifted to Kyle's favor after what's been presented so far. But that's where we're at. So we got the prosecution finishes up probably what you heard was Tuesday. Then we're going to hear from the defense. We're going to see probably more video. We're going to see that defense use of force expert. Anything else that as you look back on this first week, overarching perspectives from your being there in court every day, or even just maybe observations of, you know, who's, well, one of the observations that I don't know if you told me this or someone else, Rosenbaum, Huber families, they're not in court, you know,
they're not in court. No.
So what you could conclude what you want from that. They may not have been close with their families at all because of the kind of people that they were. They might've been.
Sure. Wait, you're talking about the dad who flipped off the judge? Anthony Huber's dad flipped the judge off on a Zoom call.
That's right. I do remember that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's,
you know, I will say it's funny you brought that up because I was talking to another journalist and I don't really know if you can, how much you can read into that because, you know, my gut tells me if somebody killed my kid, first of all, I'd want to go find that person. You know, if they weren't in jail, you know, I mean, I'd probably want to go murder that person if somebody took my kid. Right. You know, right. Hopefully, you know, my wife would say no. And I'd finally realize that that's not the right thing to do. But there's no telling as a grieving parent or a grieving aunt what you would do if you'd want to be at the trial. Maybe at the trial, maybe it'd make you too sick. I mean, maybe they wanted to, but it's hard to really read that. I mean, I know it's pretty common for a family of quote victims to be in court, but who knows? I mean, there's no way to know. I will say that what surprised me is that the courtroom is basically empty. And when I say that, I mean, there's media. So I told you there was a media pool. So
yep.
10 people per day get to sit in the media box. And I won the pool one day. So I sat there so I could be close to the jury to kind of get a feeling. But the other days I was just sitting, I actually sat next to the Rittenhouse family. I sat next to Wendy Rittenhouse, just by happenstance, but you know, it just, we all kind of felt comfortable in the same spots, you know, Monday through Thursday. And tons of empty seating. So I would have guessed tons of people. There would have been a line from the public to go in there and witness. But I guess since it's being streamed on Court TV, people just feel safer at home. And I really thought it was going to be a zoo there, but it just is not.
Yeah, and same thing outside. I mean, outside the courtroom, I mean, outside the courthouse, I mean, you know, that there's not, I think the media was very desiring of some big spectacle, and it just hasn't been.
And here's the thing, too, is, I don't know if you heard, but last night at about 1 in the morning, there was a murder 2 blocks from the big hotel where all the journalists are staying. So there's about 30 shots fired. So I'm sure all these journalists in Kenosha are thinking, where are we? Like, what is going on here? You know, and yeah, so they found at least 30 shells and some guy got gunned down right in downtown Kenosha. Leaving a rap concert. And so the media here is probably going to take note of that. I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it does change your perspective as someone in the media when something like that happens in your vicinity and would have to. Anything else? I that's pretty much everything I had. Last week we both speculate. I mean, we both think acquittal. After seeing the first week of trial, and this is probably supposed to be the part of a case where, you know, we pro self-defense folks take our licks because the prosecution is presenting our case. I mean, I feel better than I felt last week about the odds of acquittal, which you and I both thought he would be acquitted, thought he should be acquitted, thought if this happened in Walworth, Waukesha, Washington County, doesn't even get charged. I couldn't feel more optimistic, and I don't want to jinx it or, you know, get overly confident, but I don't think there's, I mean, there's all things on video there. I don't think there's bombshells. I think if there's bombshells, we would have got those. I mean, there's been a few surprising things. Did you know before this that the FBI had planes flying over the whole thing?
I did not know that. And there was actually some controversy where the FBI agent came and the judge ordered the media not to show his image or his voice, but basically said they lost the HD footage and they never provided it to the defense. And this FBI agent, I couldn't make this up if I tried, had a lawyer with him representing him. So it's like, you know, I miss the days when you thought of the FBI and you thought of American heroes. And now it's just, I'm afraid it's just been corrupted, you know, and I'm sure there's still plenty of hardworking, honest, patriotic FBI agents. But I mean, it's sad when you can't even trust the leading law enforcement agency in your own damn country. And so I think they ended up finding the footage, thank God, but just some shenanigans. I mean, you have HD footage of a riot, and how do you lose that? I mean, you'd think that wouldn't be possible.
I mean, that's scary. I think it's sad when we can't, I would worry about going to a hospital with COVID. I mean, seriously, like for the first time in my life, like I used to think you go to the hospital, they're going to do everything they can to save you. I don't feel like that anymore with COVID. I mean, it's just all these institutions are just breaking down around us. And that reminded me of another thing though. Grosskreutz, they had a warrant, and I know you even covered this on your website, but they had a warrant for Grosskreutz's phone. They never went into it.
Oh yeah. Big time. So they waited a month, which I thought was probably a good strategy. And if you remember, a person purporting to be Gage's friend put something out on Facebook where he said, "Hey, I just talked to Gage. He's doing better. Here's a picture of him, you know, him in the hospital bed. He's in good spirits. He did tell me that he wished he would have killed fucking Kyle Rittenhouse." And that's like a pretty close direct quote. So they waited a month. They went to the most liberal judge probably in the state, Mary Kay Wagner, at 8:12 p.m. So no chance she was at the courthouse. No chance she was at a conference. They went to her home, right, and had her sign a warrant at 8:12 a.m. And this was the second lead, you know, the runner-up detective named Martin Howard. He got the search warrant. She signed it. And then I think it was 5 days later, the mayor's nephew, you know, the mayor who let Kenosha burn, his nephew, who is the lead detective, Detective Benjamin
Antaranian,
Yep, he submitted the return on warrant, which is basically you tell the judge what you found. You know, I found, you know, three bags of cocaine, some guns. Well, in this case, he submitted a return of warrant, which is under oath, that says we did not conduct the search warrant because new information came forward, which under oath, Detective Howard said, we were told by the attorneys not to search it. And Richard says, by attorneys, do you mean Mr. Binger? And he says, yes. So that is a serious problem that somebody's going to have to get to the bottom of it, because that would have been a wealth of information. Perhaps he texted all his friends, "Hey, I wish I would have killed Kyle," or "I, you know, really tried to, you know, pull the trigger, but he got me first." That would have been vital information. Exculpatory information for Kyle, but now we'll never know what's on his phone. You know,
and I don't know the rules of evidence, but is that something that the defense will be able to put out there? Like, can the defense use that and say, "Hey, we would love to know what Grosskreutz," you know, because they can't put out speculation, hearsay, or rumors that someone heard that it said that, you know, he wished that he killed Kyle, but maybe it's not enough for the jury to draw any conclusions, but. Does the fact that they never did search the phone, can the defense, is there any leverage for the defense there to say, "Hey, Grosskreutz, you know, they had a warrant for his phone and then never searched it. We'll never know if, you know, Grosskreutz had made any, I don't know if incriminating is the right word, but any comments that would explain his..."
Well, yeah, why he came down there, perhaps, you know. What if he put on Facebook, "Hey folks, heading down to Kenosha. I hope to burn some shit down," or, "Hey folks, I'm going to Kenosha. I hope to find a 17-year-old and, and shoot them with my, you know, Glock 40 caliber. I mean, we'll never know. And,
or fuck the police, shit's going to hit the fan. Or
exactly.
You know?
There's endless possibilities of what could have been on that phone that could have been exculpatory. You know, I don't disagree with Gage's decision. I don't want somebody getting their hands on my phone seeing intimate text messages, because that Cellbrite is the software they use. It's a forensic cell phone downloader. It shows everything that's ever been on your phone, and it's scary what it has. So
things
I don't blame
you,
him for not wanting
things you thought you deleted that aren't
exactly
deleted.
And so I don't blame him. I mean, I blame him for being a shithead, but I don't blame him for not wanting the police to have it. And
right.
his attorney, Kimberly Motley, I'm sure you've heard of her.
Oh yeah.
She's been in court most of the time. And him and Kyle, I think, will be the most two interesting witnesses. They're both going to be very well coached. So Kimberly Motley is likely coaching Gage in all of his testimony. And, of course, he's the only surviving person to be shot by Kyle. So that's going to be a very interesting testimony this week. And when Kyle takes a stand, I'm sure he will. That'll be very interesting, too, because they're both going to be coached. Hopefully, they'll be, you know, Kyle will be polished and sharp. And I can't wait to see what Gage says was his reasoning for trying to shoot a kid who just told him on his own live stream, I just shot someone. I'm going to the police to turn myself in. I can't wait to see what kind of bullshit excuse he uses for running after him with a gun.
And for our listeners, Kimberly Motley, she just jumps in in Wauwatosa. She's over all some of the people in Wauwatosa that were suing the department, and then they wanted the police chief fired. She's all over that stuff. I mean, she sticks her head everywhere here where there's this is probably the least racial angle, because this is just was a, you know, Jacob Blake protest turned into riots at night. But yeah, she sticks her head into everything in Milwaukee, Southeast Wisconsin, where there's a any kind of a race baiting, you know, lefty angle to be made on this thing. So
and I asked her, it's interesting. I asked her for comments a couple times, and one of the more important things is I asked her what her and Gage were afraid of. The defense getting off of his cell phone. She didn't respond, but she made some really weird comments to me where she said that she has an investigator friend from Afghanistan who's going to be delving into my background. And I kind of laughed and I said, well, there's really nothing there, but you can check. And she's a weird cat. And like you said, she likes to jump on. She's like a Jesse Jackson. Every time you see something that rhymes with race or she's there. She wants to get her face on the TV and in the cameras, and usually she's on the losing side of things. And she's just annoying. She's just a nuisance, I'd call her.
Yeah, she's a leech. So, well, good. So we've got prosecution rests maybe Tuesday. We're going to start hearing from the defense. That'll be interesting. I can't wait for the cross-examination of Grosskreutz. Can't wait for the self-defense expert. That's going to be great testimony. And so you just mentioned it, Kyle, you do expect him to take the stand?
I do expect him to take the stand. You know, I was watching some pundits and some defense attorneys say, hey, look, the case is going so good that why take the stand? But then I remember one of my favorite politicians, Trey Gowdy. He used to be a prosecutor for the feds. And he said, he in his southern voice, he says, you know what they call a defendant that does not testify at his own trial? An inmate. So there's that old saying that, you know, if you're innocent, if you're not doing all these terrible things that the state has just spent 2 weeks saying you did, and you don't take the stand, even though the judge is going to say you can't use it against him, they do. Juries... They don't like defendants that plead the fifth. They just don't like them.
Yeah,
so I think if they want to put the cherry on top, they will have coached him, and they probably likely have hired experts to coach him. And when I say coach, I certainly don't mean lie or say things that are not true, but just the way in which you answer questions and, you know, waiting for the entire question to be finished before you answer, being polite so they don't hate you, those types of things. So where you might see T. Claire shine, or at least where he thinks he's going to shine, will be in the cross-examination of Kyle Rittenhouse, which I suspect might even take a full day. I think we'll see Kyle on the stand for an entire day.
But I think Kyle will do well because, first off, aside from the fact that he is young, I think that He doesn't look like a threatening person. He doesn't. All the videos of him. I mean, there's videos where naive. You could call him naive, but naive isn't a reason. I mean, that doesn't make you dislike a person because they're naive. It just makes you think, yeah, they're a little young and not even immature, just naive. When he talks about, I'm here. Like, and even one guy said I think you mentioned this guy's name earlier. He might be a blogger or something, but he was the black. I don't want to call him a journalist, but he called himself a YouTuber,
Corey Washington.
An influencer. Yeah. And he even said, I saw this guy, wearing gloves. Why would you have a gun and blue gloves? Why would that just didn't go together. And I'm like, well, he said he was a medic. If you're going to be helping people that are bleeding, cut, whatever, you're going to put, they put gloves on. That's what, I like everybody else understood why Kyle had gloves on. It's not good. And then the chain smoking thing, that was like probably one of the things that I thought they were trying to make a pejorative comment about Kyle, that he was chain smoking. And I'll be honest.
I'm very surprised that T. Claire did not write him some kind of citation for underage tobacco use. as all of the curfew citations were dismissed in the county. Because the sheriff, who is a rhino, there's an R in front of his name, but he's a Democrat, did not enact the curfew properly. So in this case, as if you want to go to a jury trial for an ordinance violation, it's a 6-person jury. So right now the legal question is, can this jury even decide on the curfew ticket, which I thought the judge should have dismissed it right away. The smoking thing, that was just a low blow, just to get people to maybe look. I smoked when I was 16 years old. I'm not a smoker anymore, but does that mean I should go to prison? It's kind of stupid, but they got it in.
Do you think because the gun charge, that's still to be litigated as part of this case, correct? That's Kyle's attorneys are still going to make that case that he's not guilty of.
And this is one of those cases where, I think it's better decided by a judge because it's such a technical issue.
It is.
That you could explain it to the jury for a solid week and they still might not understand because there's legislative intent, there's spirit of the law, there's the legislative history. I mean, there's so much to this to where, the defense or the prosecutor keeps saying, it's a hunting loophole. Well, it's not. It's that's not what it is. And so I hope the judge takes that. I hope he decides that. I hope he dismisses it. He could send it to the jury. He could send the jury back with the misdemeanor gun charge, and technically he could send the jury back with the curfew ticket. But, and if you notice, the defense keeps asking every witness, were you cited for curfew? No. Were you? No. Were you? No. Nobody except Kyle. I mean, that's just something that T. Claire did that was – just to be a dick.
It's a dick move. Yeah, it's no different than when he brought our attorney all the way up from Atlanta to dismiss the case against Guy Smith. It was just a dick move.
and what's interesting is there's a Supreme Court rule protecting the rights of a third person that basically says a prosecutor can, or any other attorney by that matter, cannot intentionally do something to inconvenience a third party. So the Office of Lawyer Regulation, they're not very, they don't really, they're not big on disciplining attorneys, but that would have been a ripe complaint for that agency because I think it was pretty clear he did that. Just like I don't usually, talk like this, but it's like there's no other way to say he did it just to be a dick. Yeah. And, putting the curfew ticket on, it's like a $150 fine. If that's the only one that he gets, convicted of, that actually kind of be an interesting story. So, went from 6 felonies to 1 curfew ticket.
Yeah.
And then that is ripe for a de novo. So if, he can probably have another, a judge look at it and he could bring it to the Supreme Court where it would absolutely get dismissed because the sheriff has even admitted he knows he didn't enact the curfew properly. So, it'd be interesting to see what they happen, but they got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, Kevin, man, thank you so much for your time. I'm enjoying this. I'm getting great feedback from people on the show and, the coverage that we've got here. So, we'll do it again. If you're free next Sunday, we'll do it again and, see what the next week brings.
Be happy to. Nice chatting with you. I'll be in court, all week and, I'll be Got some stories that I got coming out this week, and hopefully I can get some new material. And like I said, everybody can watch Court TV. So, on my website, I'm not putting the typical play-by-plays, but I'm trying to get the interesting perspectives. Well, great. Yeah. Have a good night, Nick. Thanks for having me again.
Appreciate it, Kevin. Yep. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. So Kevin Mathewson, editor of Kenosha County Eye and investigative journalist / criminal investigator in his professional endeavors. So that's the show. Well, there's one real quick, and we're an hour and a half into the show now, and there is a few other things that have been going on I thought I'd throw out here as we wrap up the show here. Channel 6, they've had this was it last week? There was a news coverage of the Sheriff Schmaling. I don't know if his first name is Christopher. Sheriff Schmaling down to Racine. He has a press conference where one of his investigators details these criminal acts that he believed were committed by the Wisconsin Election Commission. These were committed people at the retirement facility down in Racine. I think it was 48 people that weren't cognizant enough to vote, didn't even know their own families, people who had mental health, but they had, degenerative mental capacity issues, Alzheimer's, dementia, those kinds of things. So there's a press conference to cover this. None of the local networks carried it live. You know darn well if this would have been the other shoe on the other foot, they would have all been there live. But it was live streamed on Facebook by the Kenosha County Racine County Sheriff's Department. The networks, Channel 6, Channel 12, so on and so forth, they did cover the press conference in their nightly news coverage. Gave it the 45-second, 90-second news clip about this. The way that they introed it was, for those who might be listening and haven't seen it, down in Kenosha, well, statewide, because of COVID, it used to be special voting deputies had to go into the nursing homes to assist nursing home residents who had diminished mental capacity with voting. And there's a Republican and a Democrat special voting deputy, so that you make sure that, when people are going to help these people who have dementia and Alzheimer's, that they don't, say, hey, who do you want to vote for? Here's Joe Biden. He's a good guy. You want to vote for him, right? Here's Trump. Oh, Trump's a terrible, So these special voting deputies, there's a Republican one, I don't know if it's appointed or hired by, or there's a Republican and a Democrat one. So they go in there and you have that. Both have to be present when these residents of nursing homes that can't vote for that have diminished mental capacities when they want to vote absentee. So this is a state law that these special voting deputies have to be there. So the Wisconsin Election Commission decides that because of COVID, they're not going to allow these special voting deputies in. Just the staff from the nursing home can help the residents vote. So they start doing this investigation. The sheriff in Kenosha appoints or has one of his deputy investigators do the investigation. They find off that they find out that there's essentially 48, they had complaining witness or complaints from members of the community whose parents or parent lives at this nursing home that they aren't aware of what's going on around them. They don't even recognize their own family anymore. And after the election, they went and looked and said, oh, hey, my parent voted. My parent hasn't voted in 10 years. And all of a sudden for 2020, they voted. Huh. Nothing to see here, right? Well, anyway, this sheriff's deputy does this investigation, finds out that essentially he's not accusing the people of voting illegally, but he is saying that by not having the special voting deputies there, the process was tainted. There's a reason for that process of these special voting deputies. The Wisconsin Election Commission is the one who prevented the nursing homes from having the special voting deputies come in. Therefore, the Wisconsin Election Commission is the one that committed vote fraud, cites the statute. This is all of this initial press conference. So all the networks did cover that press conference, not live, but they did an evening report on it, that the first night of it, 50 seconds, minute, just one of those very short segments of the news. But since then, and they preface it by, example, this was Channel 6, Sheriff Schmeling, a Trump supporter, held a press conference. It was just, it was biased from the word go, but then it was also interesting that since this press conference, which was last week, that was held by Sheriff Schmeling and his investigator, they gave that like one segment the first night. And now every single night on the news, there's a segment with the network news, local networks, four or six, 12, with all kinds of other parties like the Wisconsin, Megan Wolf from the Wisconsin Election Commission, all these other people, giving them a whole segment to rebut what was said. So they give the actual press conference and the content of that press conference about whether it was a 45 or a minute and a half segment. And then now nightly after the press conference, they give all these other parties their rebuttal to totally suffocate. It's so phony of the news. I mean, you and I both know this, but it's just, you see it on display every single night. It's just something I couldn't help but notice and remark on for the show. But anyway, so it's, with daylight savings, it's now, what are we at? It's 9:30, which feels like 10:30 because in their body clock is saying 10:30. So we're going to cut the show, make it a wrap here. We'll be back at it next week. We've got some more fall-like weather. Gosh, what a beautiful weekend we had this weekend. I mean, this is, fall is my absolute 100% favorite time of year. Spring, summer, love them, but fall is my absolute favorite time of year. Not a big fan of the snow. I mean, we make the best of it, but and if you didn't have fun this weekend, I guess maybe some people aren't the cooler weather type, but it's the best part of living in Wisconsin for me right now. So great weekend, and looking forward to the upcoming weeks in this favorite time of year here. So hope you guys had a great week. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Stay safe, stay free, carry on, and be well armed.
Sniper Chick Julie, you've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.